Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by our super Patreon supporters, Chester Copperpot, Jade, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton, Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, and Will Nash.
Bow, you shits!
The real war isn't between a few squabbling houses. It's between the living and the dead.
Winter is coming.
Why are all the gods such vicious cunts?
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
I am the shield that guards the realms of men.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
I drink and I know things.
You're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms!
Death is the enemy. The first enemy and the last.
I am the god of jits and wine.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things Mailbag Edition.
Mailbag.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. I'm not going to do the Blue's Clues thing because we don't have license for that.
Yeah, we don't want to get a copyright claim on YouTube.
We're not going to break any laws today. No.
We don't have any white claws with us, so we can't do that.
Oh, that's where we get crazy. Let's address the elephant in the room. You might notice that Andy is not here with us. He had a loss in the family today. He announced it on Twitter, so I feel safe announcing that for him. Penny, his dog of many years, passed away unexpectedly. So he will not be on this episode, nor will he have been. You'll have heard it by now, but the breakdown of episode 5 of House of the Dragon, because we're doing all this in one day. So I told everyone on the Discord, we just watched Clueless together on the Discord as a fam. That's a new thing that we can do. But just for all the listeners out there, that's where Andy is. So keep him in your thoughts. If you're friends with him on Twitter or anything like that, reach out and give him your support if you find that that's appropriate.
Yeah. Miss Penny has long been a staple of Streaming Things. You've definitely heard her in the background and being a silly girl. And so this is, you know, it's very sad.
Very, very sudden. Very sad. Today is our big mailbag episode. We're going to talk mostly about House of the Dragon. And then at the end, we got some Rings of Power emails as well. So stick around for that if you're a big fan of the Rings of Power. We love doing these episodes, reaching out to the fans and kind of having a conversation with our listeners. It's one of my favorite things to do. We did it a ton with Stranger Things, but covering both shows, it's kind of, and all of the patron stuff, because we got to do all kinds of bonus episodes and activities with all the patrons. And it's a lot of time. So we haven't had the time to do as many mailbags this go around. So this is fun for me. I'm glad that we're finally delving into it, as the dwarves would say.
But not too deeply.
No, never that.
Or too greedily.
Never that. Yeah. We don't want to delve too greedily into the mailbag.
I do want to do a shameless plug, though.
Go.
You mentioned that we did a watch party of Clueless on the Discord.
Yes.
Today, guys, this episode that you're listening to drops on Wednesday. So today, this evening.
As of right now.
We are going to do another Discord watch party at the Streaming Things Discord, we're going to be watching the debut episode of Star Wars Andor on Disney Plus. And so if that interests you at all, head on over to the Discord, join the Watch Party channel, and we will do that. Look on social media for what time we're going to do that. And if you are not part of the Discord, go on to patreon.com/streamingthings and become a member at the appropriate tier and be a part of it, because I think this is something we're going to do more often, and it's going to be a lot of fun moving forward.
I had a blast, and there were some hiccups. It was our first launch, our maiden voyage, yeah. as you said, like Isildur's first voyage.
The West kept calling to us.
Yeah, the whole time we were trying to watch Clueless.
Some ropes were dropped.
Steve,
the Wi-Fi can't keep up.
But yeah, it's the options are endless with what we can do with the Watch Party feature. So that's fire. So we're going to test it out with Andor, and we might even do an Andor recap episode for the podcast fans. Right in to streamingthingspod@gmail.com if you would like that, because Steve and I at least are happy to make the extra effort wherever like a ton of interest is.
Mm-hmm. So if it's something you guys are really passionate about, like, yeah, please do Andor as well, let us know and we'll
yeah
do it. and if no one writes in, we just won't do it.
Yeah, be loud, be proud, because like we would rather do a show that we never thought about covering if everybody's interested in it than something that we're super excited about, we think is going to go well, and is a complete dud. Mm-hmm. Like we got one or two emails about Paper Girls. And then I think I got one email about Cobra Kai season 5. We're not going to cover the show if that's, you know, so tell your friends, everybody speak up, because then we'll switch gears.
Because after Hot D and Rings of Power, it's a big question mark what we're going to cover next after that. It could just be us doing a normal movie weekly recap stuff.
Go back to our random movies and shows thing, but we're happy to dive right into another property if you guys are into it. Yeah. So we could even do a show that's been out for a while. We've never done that before, but if there's enough, you know,
Firefly.
Sure. That's been a long while. Yeah. I was thinking more like Succession, or Chernobyl or something like that. But by the way, Succession, such a good fight.
We covered Chernobyl already on the show. We did deep dive it. Yeah.
We did. Yeah. Yeah. But we didn't have a 10th of the audience that we do.
That's
now.
True. We didn't, but
just delete this episode. Yeah. Well, actually, we've never done it. Or re-release them. I don't know. Let me check them first. Maybe they weren't good.
It had one of the best openings we've ever had music wise. Cause that was the one, cause we were doing, Good Omens at the same time. And so the show opening was a blend of Chernobyl and Good Omens. So it was a lot of like,
that's the weirdest.
I know, but it was so funny. Cause it's like, there's graffiti on the ground. And then we cut to David Tennant going, no, there's not.
That's the weirdest double feature we've ever done.
Oh, it was fun.
Makes way less sense than T-Rap and Hot D. All right, diving right in. Let's get into the House of the Dragon.
Oh, and one more thing. I'm sorry to cut you off again. Full disclosure, we're recording this before episode five
of
Hot D.
So whatever develops and transpires, not our fault.
Yeah, whatever happened this Sunday, guys, we recorded this before, so... You know, but give us some grace there.
I think most of these emails are retrospective anyway.
Yeah.
But just to be clear. So, yeah. And we're going to do another, at least one more huge mailbag after House of the Dragon and the Rings of Power wrap up. So keep your thoughts coming to streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Don't be discouraged if we didn't choose your email or if you didn't get your email in time. Completely fine. We understand.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one comes in from Fiona. And this is one of, I don't know, 3 or 4 emails around this topic that we got. I'm going to read them all the ones that I chose, just because there's a different good perspective on each one, or they say some other things, but it's a hot topic that last episode 4 had the internet aflame. But this one comes in from Fiona, big fan from Australia and loving the Hot D chat. I was just thinking Daemon couldn't finish with Missaria. Well, not that we saw, and he couldn't with Rhaenyra. This got me thinking of 2 other scenes. Number 1, when Rhaenyra says that Daemon's wife is fortunate because he hasn't put a child in her. What if he's never finished in her either? Therefore, she will never have his child. He laughs it off as her having a hostile environment. And 2, Mizarra's reaction on the bridge to the idea that she was pregnant. Maybe it was such an extreme reaction because he's never finished with her. Yes, female sex workers had ways to prevent pregnancy, so she would know, but it's something to consider. Maybe Daemon is impotent now, either psychologically or physically. He'd produce no heirs ever. Did I think I would ever give this much thought to a fictional character's seed? No. But hey, here we are. Keep up the great work, fellas. Fiona. P.S. I love the acknowledgement that you wished you had a female perspective on the last episode. Even saying that out loud was huge for a female fan like me to hear. So thank you. Smiley face. Thank you, Fiona, for writing in. And we appreciate that. That was our goal, at least to acknowledge, like, self-awareness doesn't suffice. It doesn't always, you know, eliminate any transgressions, but we made an attempt. And I actually made a TikTok breakdown of episode 4, as I always do. And in that video, I said, hey, I can't say whether or not certain things in this episode were handled well as a male, but blah, blah, blah. And I got so much negative feedback for that comment. Like, a lot of fragile men, but even a lot of women were commenting, like, you can 100% speak your mind on that. That's ridiculous. You know, I kind of got some flack for that. And I don't think I was wrong for saying that, you know, in the realm of forced abortions and, you know, forced Plan T and loss of innocence for young women, and especially with uncles and guardians and things like that. Like,
yeah,
definitely didn't feel like it was my place to say at least whether or not the show handled it tactfully. I would never presume to be the judge of that. Right.
Sure. I mean, you can have an opinion on it, but I think it's worth pointing out, like, hey,
yeah,
like, my opinion might not be coming from the best source of context, right?
Exactly. I didn't think it was that crazy. Everybody thought it was so crazy. I didn't think it was. Like, if I was going to watch Prey and was, like, on the internet, like, oh, this is such good Native American representation, like, I would never say that, because, yeah, like, I have no fucking clue if that's right, true or not. That's all I was trying to say.
Right.
As a man in this episode, I didn't. But Fiona brings up some good points. Steve and I know a lot about the future of this story. We've read the book, so we're not going to comment on everything that Fiona said or asked or predicted, especially regarding the efficacy of certain people's seed. You know,
I don't like it.
But there's a lot. We wanted to put this in here because Fiona was so kind in the email, number one, but also it brings some good questions. And again, this is not the only email that we're going to read today about this subject. Steve and I did not watch, or Andy didn't either. None of us watched after the episode breakdown on episode 4.
We typically don't.
We usually don't, because if the show,
we don't want it to color our perspective of what we read from it.
Yes.
Because, I mean, we could have watched that and then come on to the microphone here and been like, oh, well, you know what?
I think he was impotent.
This is what happened. Yeah, I think he was impotent. When really it's like, well, the director told us that. Like, we kind of like coming at it from the idea of, like, this is what we saw. This is how the episode, what it achieved with us. And then, you know, in hindsight, we can look back into it on a mailbag episode like this one and say, oh, this is what they were going for. Did they succeed? Did they fail? In this instance, I think they did fail in showing that.
So for those that don't know and didn't watch it either, the showrunners, was that Ryan Condal that was talking at the time? I forget now, because I barely watched it since.
I didn't watch it. Somebody wrote in and said exactly who it was. I think it was Ryan Condal.
Yeah, they were claiming that in that scene where Damon kind of seems to rethink what he's doing with Rhaenyra, that the reason behind that was because his, you know, he couldn't. This is so weird to talk about. He was unable to carry on his little soldier. His
good time boy.
He couldn't get erect, right? Like, because the implication was because she was, this is super gross, but because she was, like, into it and he wasn't as in control, it wasn't as much his thing.
Well, yeah, because this is a character that likes power. And if he feels like he's not in control of a situation, he loses the oomph, the interest, as it were, you know? So that's why he kind of lost his impotency in this moment. It's also kind of goes back to, what was that, episode 1, when he's having sex with Mizaria, and it's right when, like, oh, there's going to be an
heir. And so that was like the least sexy sex scene of all time.
Yeah, because he's like, I can't do it.
He's just like plowing the gates of the castle.
So like, it makes sense, like, within that context. I think it does make sense, like, oh, this is a guy who likes being in charge. He likes having that power. But when he feels like power is being taken from him and the tables are turning on him, he can't get it up because he's just so
sure.
He gets his rocks off on that power.
And I hate this concept. Not only I don't think it was very clear if that was indeed their intention, but maybe it's selfish that I think, obviously, it says disgusting things about his character. And we already know he's not a great person, but that's like exceedingly gross for me to grasp. So I don't like that being the reason, you know, there is a lot that I missed about the nefarious nature of why he took her there, why he took her hat off. Was this all part of a grander plot to force her to marry him? Things like that. I missed all of that. Andy was arguing for that, I think, at the time we recorded this, and I kind of brushed him off, but a lot of our listeners and a lot of the people out in the world took that reading as far as his intentions for that evening. So I think I missed some of that, but anywho, we'll get into more of this subject here very shortly.
I think there's definitely some sort of manipulation going on with that sex scene in particular. Now, whether or not Damon, how much of it is his doing and how much he's in control of that and if he's part of it, but I get the feeling, and I think this is something that we missed out on, is that it seems that because there's such a large time jump between episodes, the last time we saw Misaria when they were on Dragonstone and she was all mad at him, like, why'd you tell them that I'm pregnant, bro? You put a target on my back. It seems like she's been living in King's Landing this whole time that Daemon's been in the Stepstones. So they haven't technically been together for, you know, a year, 2 years. And in that time, she's been
almost 3 years, I think.
Yeah. In that time, she's been having this sort of relationship with Otto Hightower, meaning like she's now the spy. She's the white worm at King's Landing.
Right.
That because Otto has this, he says something where like, oh, the source has never steered me wrong, which is like implies that there has been this background relationship happening that off screen.
And she's doing what she can to survive.
Yeah. And in the episode, I mentioned that the little boy that spotted Rhaenyra and Daemon going into the sex house. But yeah, like I in the last episode, I mentioned that there was the boy that saw them going into the brothel, and later on we see Misaria paying him. It's actually the other way around. And that scene, the boy is paying Misaria, meaning that Otto paid the boy. And the boy is paying.
He's just a go-between.
Yeah. So we had that slightly wrong in the interpretation, but there clearly is something going on between Otto and Misaria.
And the question, it still begs the question on whether or not Daemon is privy to that relationship, though.
Yeah.
Because he was all hungover. They were kind of arguing, right? She didn't seem to have very much respect for him at that moment. So it's almost as if it's very believable to me that Misaria is acting on her own. And Daemon has no idea that she's paid the boy to do, or, you know, sent the boy there and got
what
the money.
Have you paid the boy for?
I don't even care what the boy's got money for. I'm lofty. I got shit going on up here. So yeah. And again, we're going to talk about this exact scene a couple more times throughout these emails. Do you want to read the one from Tony? It's a quick one.
Yeah. So Tony writes in, yo guys, I wanted to throw out there for the mailbag episode that on Hot D, Tyland and Jason Lannister are played by the same actor. I assume you guys were overly tired when you came up with the wild idea that they were different people. I mean, have you ever seen them in the same room at once? LOL. Nope. You guys are great. Thanks for the great content. Tony, that's all on me because honestly, I just looked at the actor who played Jason. And then when Andy was like, oh, did he play his brother too? I was like, yeah, I don't know. Fuck. Yeah. I just kind of rolled with it because I couldn't remember what Tyland looked like in that moment.
Yeah.
And I just was like,
no, they're different people.
They're different people. I don't know. Like, fuck. So that's all on me.
We were tired. And I'll take some of the brunt too. I was way off on that. I was just over here like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about.
Who's Jason?
So, but thank you, Tony. We've talked about that correction before, but we always appreciate the corrections for sure. I feel like I was like the world's preeminent expert on Stranger Things and just nowhere near that on House of the Dragon and Rings of Power. Definitely not Rings of Power. Like House of the Dragon, I actually know quite a lot about Game of Thrones, but like Lord of the Rings, I only know the movies and I read the books when I was a kid.
In your defense, House of Dragon and Rings of Power both are much larger in terms of scope as to like characters and relationships and
an entirely different lore.
There's
a lot more room to fuck up is what you're saying.
Yeah. Stranger Things is just these core 20 characters in Hawkins, Indiana.
Right. You know? That's fair.
Yeah.
Throw myself a freaking bone here.
Throw me a freaking bone here, Tony.
Bone here. The next email comes in from Annalise. Hi, guys. Big fan of the pod since the recent Stranger Things season. I went back and listened to every Stranger Things pod episode after the fact and now watching House of the Dragon primarily so I can listen to your perspective on the show during the pod. Love streaming things. Thank you.
Thanks.
I know you mentioned having a mailbag pod in the next week. It's happening right now.
Right now.
Or so. And I just wanted to add a bit of my own perspective in the Daemon Rhaenyra scene in Flea Bottom, which, let's be honest, was kind of awesome in a totally uncomfortable way. I love that you guys are self-aware to note that there are no women to immediately comment on certain aspects of this episode. So I wanted to just add my two cents in case it broadens any discussion. Please. Hopefully it does.
Add several cents.
Firstly, I love how the episode opens with the shot of her fiddling with her Valyrian steel necklace from Daemon while she's on her tour of suitors. It dooms the scene from the beginning as it's clear that she's thinking about Daemon as she's hearing these would-be suitors go on about whatever they could offer because she's not really interested. That's a very good T. tidbit. Very good perspective. I was intrigued by your take that when Damon removes Rhaenyra's hat in the pleasure house, or sex house, as Steve calls it, he was trying to say, let's not hide here, etc. I know, I think my take was just completely wrong. I definitely got that, but I also took it as slightly more sinister, maybe setting up a little bit that they might be sighted together, which would create more drama upon which he thrives. I think the bit where he pulls away from her is multifaceted, as some of which you guys covered. I think he wanted to tease her a bit, as is true to his character. That's what I had said, I think. And true to what he was trying to do from the beginning, which is show her that coupling can be fun, not just torture for the woman, etc. But also, I think he was checking for himself to see if he was right or wrong in his suspicions that she may want him too. I think he used that as a test to see if she would try to kiss him back and pursue him, which led him to feel confident in asking Viserys to give him Rhaenyra. Maybe I'm just projecting, wishing that we got to see a flash of a vulnerable Daemon here, but let me know what you think. This is obviously a small detail, but I just didn't want it to go unsaid because I think their acting was so complex and layered and all aspects of it should be noted. What do you think about that section so far, Steve?
I think that's a really great, you know, perspective. I think, we did talk about like, this is our place. I think what she's saying about like, it's not quite, it's both let's not hide here, but also his more sinister intent of trying to see, you know, trying to expose in some way.
Yeah.
And I think it can be both, right? Cause Damon does feel like, you know, we're fucking awesome. We're Targaryens. We shouldn't hide, but also it's not beneath him to do something like this. That's literally what he's done almost every episode. He like does something to piss people off, you know?
Yes. And I think he's like a dog chasing cars. do you want to know how Damon got these scars? I think, I don't know why my Joker's a little Argyle-y. What if Batman's a little girl, man? what if things are about to get stranger? I do think that even though they said I do think that even though they said he was impotent, that I think there's a lot more valid readings of that scene, not aside from that, which is good because again, I hate that idea. And she goes on, I know this ship is fundamentally wrong, but in the context of the time, space, world, and the insane chemistry these characters, actors have together, I just can't look away. I'm excited to see where these characters are headed as I try to avoid spoilers, not a book reader. Also, you are fully spot on the Sir Criston / Rhaenyra scene. Love the time they took to remove his armor, his cloak, etc., and the visuals of them together. Love Damon's feminist take, as you put it. It's fine if they were in a whorehouse at that age. Why shouldn't it be okay if she does it? Appreciate all you guys do. Thank you for making my dog walks on Monday morning so much more exciting. So she'll be listening to this tomorrow morning. No, Wednesday.
Wednesday morning.
But our recap of 5 tomorrow morning.
Yes.
I just wanted to touch on that part too, because again, my experience of talking about the show online the next day was that many, many women specifically were very much into the vibe of Damon and Rhaenyra, right? Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, that was hot and steamy, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which again, I couldn't speak on as a man and definitely wasn't going to go there in the initial reaction, like just in case it was way off. Right.
Yeah.
But I do think that the actors have incredible chemistry. It's just, it's unfortunate that the dynamic of the actual characters, it's so incredibly gross.
That's why this show is so interesting, is because these are very complex, layered, morally questionable.
Yeah. Ambiguous at best.
Yeah. At best. But there's so many, there's such a great example of like power dynamics happening within relationships that's constantly evolving in ways that, you know, just take everyone by surprise. And that's why it's so cool.
Indeed. So thank you, Annalise. You did add a lot of much needed perspective on those scenes. Steve, take the next one.
Well, who reads the next one?
Alyssa.
Alyssa, she writes, hi, hello, good morrow. Prefacing this, that while I did not read Fire and Blood, I did read The World of Ice and Fire. So I have the abridged version of what's going on rolling around in my brain and have been able to anticipate some of the plot. Loving the show, loving the way they're addressing things that are kind of left up for question or interpretation. Loving that George is... texting shorthand. Is very, very involved. So hopefully I won't be rallying the angry villagers at the end of this to burn down HBO a la season 8 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Keep cool your jets.
Cool them pies. However, I'm sure you've received 8,000 emails about adding this to a song of errors and corrections. So here's an email. Here's email 8,001, because I have a bone to pick with whomst ever is responsible for directing. We were all a little in parentheses, a lot uncomfy during the Damon Rhaenyra sex near sex scene and could come up with a number of theories as to why he didn't follow through with it and solidifying that it was indeed just a rumor. I was doing mental gymnastics to try and understand if maybe he just reached a point where his love for her overcame his love for power, whatever the case may be. There was a plot furthering season.
Reason.
Oh, sorry. We get the great scene with him hungover as fuck in the throne room, further bringing up some theories of his intentions. Episode finishes, credits roll, and the inside the episode begins. When I yelled, what? When they so matter-of-factly say, yeah, Damon just couldn't seem to coax his craxies out of the old dragon pit.
His old noodle boy.
Is that an actual quote?
I don't think so.
God damn, I kind of want that on a shirt. You mean to tell me that while they're showing thruples and...
Thruples, Steve.
I don't know. That's not a real word.
What's a thruple?
I don't know. What's a thruple?
Two chicks and a dude.
Thruple.
Or two dudes and a...
and quads and all manner of orgies going on in the background. They couldn't show a little more directly at Damon just needed some Viagra and that the reason he didn't follow through with fucking his niece didn't have some larger Game of Thrones-esque meaning. No nuance or long game. Just some whiskey dick. I'm mad and I'm gonna stay mad. Long may this podcast reign.
Alyssa. Long may this podcast reign.
Long may it reign. Alyssa, I agree. Like, I don't think what they intended to tell the audience in that scene worked. Like, they clearly had an idea of what they were trying to, you know, show us. But in the moment and how it was directed and how it was shot, I don't think that came across at all, really. And yes, it really wasn't until like other people were like, oh, that's what they said. And then you can kind of work backwards from what they say and like make it make sense with that context in mind. But in the moment, I don't think it really achieved what they were going for.
No. I wanted to include Alyssa's email because she felt so strongly about what horseshit it was, but also she brings up a very good point. Like, you've got people 69ing directly in the background and you're
for hours on end.
You're being shy about like directly implying that he can't get it up. Like, what? Now you're having scruples? Where's your scruples with the 69ers in the back?
Yeah.
By the way, there's a really cool quote from Millie Alcock, who plays young Rhaenyra. I don't know if you saw this online, Steve. I think you did. I think I retweeted it, but it's a quote from her. And she's like, yeah, it was such a weird day. Like, there's just extras who had never met each other 69ing for 12 hours in the background. So that they had to do a whole long day of shooting that sex house scene, as Steve would put it.
Can you imagine being the 69 actors? Like,
I could.
Like, I imagine it's awkward, but then like, how much worse is it when you get back from the lunch break?
Oh, for sure. In like 8 hours in, you know, now you know each other pretty well.
Yeah. Whoever's the one laying down. Well, it depends on how they're positioned, but in my mind, there's someone laying down and someone just above them.
No, I think they do like a spooning 69 situation. Okay. That way you can stay there for so long.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But then you got your leg up, you know, that's got to get tiresome.
Oh yeah.
On the old love handles.
I want to hear the behind the episode from those people's yeah, perspective.
Through the extras.
I hope some of them fell in love.
For sure. My Merkin fell off and then.
You want to know how me and Doug met?
He had a Crown Royal bag. Housing is junk. This next email is actually a couple of messages that we got via Patreon from Matt. I just want to include a few tidbits in there that I thought were interesting. Of course, he says, hey, did you guys not watch the fucking behind the episodes after 4 like many people did? The answer is no.
Nay.
We choose not to because we don't want to color our readings of the show. But also, it's an old habit. We didn't mention this earlier, to not spoil the next episode. So like, you know, again, we try to reason what's going to happen and stuff. So in a show where there's not a book that we've all read, it's very important that we don't watch the next on. So we try to cut away before that. And by not watching the next on, you don't watch the behind the scenes either. It's just a thing that we do, guys. It's just a thing that we do. A couple things to note. The other thing I've heard you talk about a few times is the King's Landing Godswood. I've been rereading the Song of Ice and Fire series, and there is indeed a heart tree with a face, but it is a white oak, I believe, and not a weirwood with the red leaves like in Winterfell. Not sure why they made it a weirwood for the show, other than that it looks awesome with the red leaves. And I wanted to talk about that. Again, I should have done more research. I've read these books so many times, but we got another email. I may or may not have included it. I don't recall. But I think someone made a really good point that there might still be a full-on weirwood Godswood in King's Landing, because this part of the story takes place before Baelor the Blessed, who is a Targaryen king that comes to power a couple generations from now. And part of what Baelor the Blessed did, he was a huge, very pious king. And so he is strong in the faith of the Seven and makes it his mission to destroy other religions, and namely, you know, the old gods, you know, the werewoods, things like that. So it's very possible that this just still exists because he hasn't burned it down yet. He hasn't destroyed it yet because he doesn't exist yet. And I thought that was a very keen assessment from one of our listeners. That's most likely the case there. But thank you to Matt as well. And then he also asked, lastly, do you guys think that the dagger that revealed its song with fire is the same one that the killer who tried to murder Bran had? It is 100% the same dagger, which is super, super cool. And then Matt also asks later in another message, I thought this was funny. Does Martin ever mention characters getting high? With all that, with all that milk of the poppy floating around, you would think people would be double cupping that shit. And that's a very good point. Martin never does mention that. But I've thought about it myself too. Like, how many people are just abusing milk of the poppy there?
Oh, all of them. Wasn't there like a, in lore, isn't there something where like one of the Grand Maesters, it might even be Pycelle, like abused milk of the poppy?
I think he did recreationally use poppy. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, I think I messaged Matt on Patreon. I talked to him about the, what's it called? Shade of the Evening. It's that.
That's drink. A poison, right?
Well, it's the drink that the warlocks use in the land or the House of the Undying. And I think it helps give them visions, and it also turns
tripping
their,
balls.
Their teeth blue.
Their lips
blue.
Yeah. Like Piet Pre.
Yeah. It's not like Icy's that turn your teeth blue, but it's their lips. Some lips.
It's just some lips.
I assume that would be like a hallucinogenic, or it'd be like the that's equivalent like, of drinking
like shroom tea.
Scissorp.
It's like shroom tea. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it's like drinking lean, Steve.
No.
No, that's just some liquor and Seroquel, a little codeine. That wouldn't make you trip.
Oh, you know the Maesters be doing that.
Now, Maester Marty B is known to abuse the milk of the papa quite a bit.
I prefer to use the term enjoy quite a lot.
Not abuse. That's true. That's
I
true.
Get a 40 of the milk of the papa, and I go to town. Let me tell you what.
Let me tell you what.
I make a day of it.
Why wouldn't you? You know, you got to relax after a long day at the old Westerosi lab.
That's what I'm saying. Everyone keeps being a prude about it, and I'm like, hey, you're lost.
That's right.
More milk of the papa for me.
Let me show you my crib. Why don't you read the next email from DJ?
DJ writes in, great pod. Did you notice a naughty orgy tapestry behind Alicent in the last episode? Proper chamber artwork befitting a queen. Nay, keep up the great work.
I like that your instinct was to say yay.
Yeah, it was. It was. Then I saw the end at the last second. Like, oh no, he meant no. Funny enough, DJ, that orgy tapestry was actually in the first episode in Queen Emma's chambers when she's kind of sitting there, and
it's been in the family a long time.
Yeah, that's a family heirloom. And my boy, have you seen these tapestries? Oh, they're so beautiful.
They love tapestries in this family. At least Allison does.
That's one of my favorite memes from this season of Hot D, is just the whole like, have you guys seen the tapestries? They're from Cahor. They're beautiful. Let's go get a feigning couch and just look at them. They're gorgeous. They've got so much material in them. It's the thread count is off the charts.
Indeed. Especially the orgy ones. They put a lot of detail in those.
Are there any other kinds of tapestries?
I presume no.
If you have an orgy, you know, those don't happen every day unless you're in the sex house. But if you're in the in King's Land, in the Red Keep,
Those are more rare.
They're more rare. It's like the modern day equivalent of like, let's take a photo of this. These events must be documented.
It's like a Polaroid.
Yeah. Shake it.
Yeah.
Shake it.
Hold the position. Somebody make a tapestry of this.
And someone's like, hold on, let me get my needles.
That takes forever. No wonder they held it for 12 hours. Our next email comes in from Mega. Hello. Thank you for covering this particular episode, which should have been titled Sex with Sensitivity. The folks behind the scenes of the show clearly wanted the women front and center in every way. This feels so different from how things were done on Game of Thrones. I'm so here for it. I wanted to share some random thoughts, if you'll bear with me. You're probably received 43,838 messages already about Daemon's impotence playing the biggest factor in the brothel scene we have with Rhaenyra. He absolutely wanted to smash. No, I'm not sure how much of how much R understands this, though. Also, how often do we see impotence portrayed in film and TV? Not often.
Not super often.
But moving
especially
on.
Especially with, you know, the blood of the dragon.
Yeah, right? Typically. Typically not with the blood of the dragon.
He's got a big red noodly boy in more than one way.
I don't know if it's big. Floppy noodly boy.
And it's not red. It's probably, it's like the white worm.
It's another name for his spy. The idea that the prince who was promised prophecy is something that was passed down from king to heir. I hate this so much. I feel like it takes away from Rhaegar's discovery of the prophecy and his subsequent transformation and focus on producing said prince in A Song of Ice and Fire. His choices shape the future of the realm in such a massive way. I can definitely understand the knowledge disappearing after some time, and that by the time we get to Mad King Aerys, he's not in any position to tell Rhaegar anything, or if he even knows anything about it. So what is the point of this prophecy being a thing before the events of Robert's Rebellion, aside from everyone thinking they've produced the prince who or need to produce said prince? I wanted to talk about this, and this is for a lot of diehard book readers are really concerned about this, but they keep bringing up this prince who was promised, the Azor Ahai prophecy in the show. They've done it twice, and only 4 episodes, I feel like that's a lot, right? Because it's something we didn't expect at all. We knew that they wanted to connect as much as possible with Game of Thrones. And I thought the first time they brought it up was just like a, oh yeah, remember the Night King kind of thing. But it really seems like they're going somewhere with this. And here's my theory. Here's my theory, Steve.
Lay it on me.
They plan on retconning season 8. Because people hate it so much. They've got this Snow sequel with Jon Snow coming up. They've got the very real potential of resurrecting Daenerys, because Drogon potentially flew Daenerys to Volantis, where there's lots of red priestesses that have the power to resurrect. And I think that they fully intend to do that and bring back the Night King in some kind of way, that he wasn't actually killed by Arya, and that if you guys know the prophecy of Azor Ahai, perhaps Daenerys is playing the role of Nissa Nissa, and then Jon killed her, right? So maybe he is the prince who was promised this, which is what everybody wanted. And then we'll carry on our wayward sons. And so they're trying to keep the knowledge of this prophecy in everyone's minds. And that's the reason for this. There is a very capitalistic, more shows coming reason that they keep bringing this up. What do you think, Steve? Why you look upset?
I don't think you're wrong. I just hate everything about that. Just the whole idea of like, Daenerys is alive again. Yay. You didn't like, I hate it when creators, and again, I'm not on the D&D side on this, but I hate it when creators make something.
They don't have the courage or the convictions.
It proves not to be popular with the fan base. And then they just fold over themselves and twist their story into knots to make it not that thing that fans are upset about.
You're talking about Star Wars?
Basically. But I just wish you can make more things about Game of Thrones and just ignore that happened, or just remake season 8. That's fine if you want to just remake season 8 from scratch, but don't fold the story into knots and do dumb things. Because the Azor Ahai, as far as I understand what the prophecy is, it already is fulfilled in terms of the prince that was promised. Jon's already there. Daenerys has already achieved the Nissa Nissa role that he had to kill her. And, you know, they are the Song of Ice and Fire. And a lot of people like to yell about how like, oh, he didn't kill the Night King. He wasn't the true prince. Without him and Daenerys, the Night King would have won. Like, a lot of people gloss over the fact that season 8 would have been a complete shit show for everyone if the Targaryens, the chosen 2 Targaryen people, Jon Snow and Daenerys, didn't bring the realm together to fight the Night King. And just because Arya was the one that stabbed
physically stabbed.
It's like, no, like without them bringing all these forces together, Arya wouldn't have been there to stab them. She wouldn't have been there without these 2 characters. Right.
Sure.
And because they are the Targaryens, they lead, right. They lead the world. And I see the prophecies already fulfilled there. So I just don't like the idea of to me, that just seems like cutting off your nose to spite your own face at the same time. You know what I mean?
I agree with you, but at the same time, I think I just have a different perspective, because I was about to say this is totally categorically different from Rian Johnson's Last Jedi, but is it, or is it just the exact same thing where it's just, I'm on the other side of it this time, because it's 2 creators that made decisions with a show that I hate. And so it doesn't feel like it's even canon
The thing that always drives me nuts is, and I think it's so funny, is the double D's, obviously they had George cliff notes. Like I 100% believe like the season 8 of Game of Thrones ends where George meant to take it, you know, minor details, including here and there. Right. But the whole end of the story, like Bran being the king,
my whole theory is
killing Danny, Danny going evil. I 100% believe that
Daenerys was takes Martin's a heel turn. Bran is king is I think what they were told.
Yeah.
But I think everything else that, and they sprinted to it and Jamie's arc. I don't see Martin doing that at all. They were just having logistical issues and, oh, we got to get Lena Headey and Nicholas Coster-Waldau back together. And like, that's what they were thinking. Right. So if, from that perspective, I think it was just a colossal fuck up. I like season 8 more than most people just because I like Arya killing the Night King.
It's one of my favorite
hot take.
That's one of my favorite TV moments of all time.
I literally leapt from my couch 100%. In pure glee.
Fucking love that moment.
I'm getting chills, just fucking getting hyped about it with you, Steve.
I mean, I've said this plenty of times, but like when referencing season 8 of Game of Thrones, I will watch the first, was it 3 episodes where you get to the long night. When the episode Long Night ends, I'm like, Game of Thrones is over on a high point.
The rest
that
is
was
just
fucking
like
rad.
The end of Return of the King and they wrap things up basically.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that there's a reason they keep bringing this up. Otherwise, why? Like the Azor Ahai prophecy is one of the most hot button topics in the diehard fandom that pisses everybody off. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't keep bringing it up in House of the Dragon unless you wanted to go somewhere with it is all I'm saying. That's not something you keep bringing up.
I think it could be, and this is something that is always kind of brought up with Targaryens, and specifically is like Targaryens have these dragon dreams, right? Where they have these prophetic dreams about, and those dreams are often misread. They are misinterpreted and they just get everyone killed. And I think this is just another example that they're going to be using this story to be like, hey, prophecies can fuck you up. Like it colors your motivations. It ruins things. And I think this is just another way of connecting it to Game of Thrones, but also like furthering the story of like, you cannot put your faith in dreams, you know?
Yeah. Dream of spring.
And dream of spring. Definitely don't put your faith in that. It's never happening.
MJ goes on. The pronunciation of cream friche.
Cream friche?
Had me rolling. I say this with all love because I mispronounce everything all the time. It will now be cream friche for me forever and ever.
We cannot take credit for that. That is a South Park joke.
Oh, is that why he's saying it that way?
Yeah, there's an episode where Randy Marsh, Dan's dad, gets really into food. And he's like freaking out about any type of food that has creme fraiche on it. And so he's always...
How's it really pronounced? Creme fraiche?
I honestly don't know.
Creme fraiche?
Creme fraiche?
Creme fraiche?
Creamy freeshy?
Finally, I love how much love Patty C is getting for his performance. I'm a longtime stan. His IMDb is literally all hits, not a single miss. I don't know if any of you have seen the Red Riding films. I have not. Mm-hmm. They are super dark and tough to watch, but so good. That sounds like my bag. And the one where Patty is the lead, Red Riding 1980, is honestly the best one. Okay, thank you. Thank you for reading all this nonsense and for doing all that you do. I feel like all or most of your listeners talk back to you as we listen while folding laundry, doing dishes, etc. The pod has been such a joy for me, and I really look forward to every episode, even when I don't love the material. Rings of Power, help.
Oh, no.
MJ on Patreon. Thank you so much.
You.
Steve, take the next one.
Is the next one Brenda?
Brendan.
Oh, Brendan. Thank you. Brendan writes.
Oh, another Godswood one. That's right.
First of all, love the podcast. You guys make me laugh more and harder than literally any other podcast I listen to. And your takes are always both fair and empathetic.
Aww.
Love you guys. Shout out from Maester Marty B. Oh, Brendan. If I had a nickel for every time I thought of you and put a smile on my face, I would have at least 2 nickels.
But it's weird it happened twice.
But it's weird that it happened twice. You should come down to the Nina. It's this water pool that I have in my chambers, and you and I shall enjoy some milk of the papa together.
Oh, no.
Close the door behind you. Brendan continues. How did he like the child killing the guy with a sword? Oh, he loved it.
I bet he did.
I've been on that repeat. That's, oh man, I've been having that on repeat in my chambers constantly. Go Blackwoods. I've got a little foam finger that says go Blackwoods.
You do.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Fuck Brackens. That's what Marty B's always said. Fuck them Brackens. They're always fighting over those hills called the Teats.
The Teats.
Yeah. It's a real lore thing. Look it up.
Oh, I know.
They continue. Anyway, more of a comment than a question, but you have mentioned the Godswood in the walls of the Red Keep. I believe what happened to that, if I recall correctly,
this was the email,
was Baylor the Blessed, who was particularly devoted to the faith of Seven and was responsible for tearing down many Godswoods in the Crownlands. He won't reign for approximately another 30 years. Thank you for everything, Brendan. That's also the guy who made the Sept. that Cersei blows up, the Sept of Baelor.
Baelor, yeah. Mm-hmm. Baelor the Blessed. Thank you so much, Brendan. Very astute lore to point out in this situation. Appreciate that. Much appreciate. Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. We're so excited to be partnered up with BetterHelp for this show because we're huge advocates for mental health. And we've always wanted a way to work it into the show. And now it gives us an easy way. I actually work in the mental health field, so I'm thinking about this all the time. My mother suffered from bipolar disorder. My dad had undiagnosed issues. And so it's really something that's close to my heart. And I'm so happy to be able to help our listeners if we can in some way with that. In my own life, I'm filled with anxiety. I'll just get a little personal for a second. I think I've talked about it, but pretty recently I checked myself into the ER for heart issues that I thought I was having. It turns out it was a panic attack. It was just anxiety. So these are things that I don't talk about a whole lot, but I suffer from. And I, you know, even being in the field, I find it very difficult to find somebody to help me with those things. A lot of the therapists that I find that I jibe with, I connect with, I find out they're not accepting new patients. So I'm like, get really frustrated. And then I don't know where to go from there. What BetterHelp does is it helps pair you with a therapist to help you with your needs. And you can switch therapists at any time. And it's directly online. So you can just easily and without any barriers whatsoever, access the help that you need. So when you want a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit betterhelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/streamingthings. This next email comes in from Jessica. Hey guys, love the show. I just finished listening to your House of the Dragon episode 4 recap, and I have some questions and a couple of dragon eggs to add.
Oh, we got dragon eggs?
When the boy who spied on Rhaenyra and Daemon reported to Otto Hightower and then is later seen visiting Daemon's mistress Missarya, aka the White Worm, it was the boy who gave the mistress the handful of money.
Yes.
Not the other way around. This had me wondering, why is the boy paying her? Who is she working for? And what does she have to gain from spying on Daemon, her own lover? Again, I think we addressed this, but our reading of the scene now is that the boy works for her, and she sent the boy to tell Otto and then came back with Otto's money. She never directly talks to Otto, so that doesn't ruin her standing to spy in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Right. Would be my guess.
Yeah.
The boy's just a flunky.
And why she would spy on Daemon is because she's not super happy with him because she left him.
She's doing what she can to protect herself, right?
Or he left her, sorry. He left her for so long to fight in the Sept Zones. And also he was, you know, he put a target on her back and made it dangerous for her. And she is everything. She's nothing if not a survivor. So she's just doing what she does best and she's surviving.
I'm a survivor. I'm not going to give up. That's the, little Destiny's Child for that ass. I love Steve. It.
Thank you.
She mentions
likes it.
She mentions not being in the skin trade, quote unquote, anymore. So clearly she's left behind her life of being a common or not so common whore for something that is more profitable and beneficial. It seems that she is now working for or with Otto Hightower as an informant of Daemon's exploits. I wondered why the boy would have been waiting outside the brothel since this was Rhaenyra's first adventure out of the Red Keep. How could he have known she would be there? My guess is she's been keeping tabs on Daemon since his return to King's Landing under orders of Missarya. So what does the White Worm have to gain from getting dirt on Daemon, who is paying her for this information? It makes sense that it would be Otto Hightower, as she has a vested interest in keeping Daemon and Rhaenyra off the throne because he wants his grandson on it, as King Viserys realizes in this episode. I have something to add there. I think it's a little less head on than that. My guess is Missarya has spies like this all throughout the city at all times. That spy was triggered by the arrival of Rhaenyra and Daemon. I don't think she was necessarily watching Daemon as closely as it looks there. She's watching everybody. Mm-hmm. My memory of Missarya or Lady Misery is that she's very much like Varys the Spider, a precursor to that person. And so she's already got eyes everywhere in King's Landing.
She's basically the master of whispers. Correct. Before that
mistress
role existed.
Of whispers.
Yeah. Because there's no actual master of whispers on the council currently, right?
Not to my knowledge.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Oh, but we forgot to mention that Rhaenyra has her own little ball in the court, in the small court.
Her ball?
Yeah. She's officially part of the small
council. Oh, she gets
now
to clock in?
She's got a little ball to clock
we
in.
We didn't forget to mention that. That's so great. I'm glad she's got balls. Yeah. It makes it so much easier to navigate this world.
Yeah. Good for her.
Remember how Daemon used his mistress as nothing but a plot point in his fabrication of her being pregnant and making her his second wife in order to lure the king to Dragonstone? I do remember. Well, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. It reminds me of how in Game of Thrones, Tyrion shipped off his own former common whore, Shay, for which she greatly resented him, and then later ascended the ranks by becoming Tywin's lover and turning against Tyrion at his trial. As with most Game of Thrones characters, their motivations is to gain power, money, or status. Like Shay, the White Worm has risen from the title of common whore and is now making real power plays of her own. Hoes be scheming. I'm curious to see where her character will go. I have not read the books. The other dragon egg was during the love scene between Rhaenyra and Sir Criston Cole. In addition to having initiated the kissing, undressing, and eventual lovemaking with Sir Criston, the indulgence scene revealed Rhaenyra taking control by being on top, which was directly reminiscent of Daenerys Targaryen taking control of her sexuality. That's correct. And love relationship with her husband Khal Drogo in the very same way after her handmaid advised her to do so. Unlike fear of Rhaenyra's first experience showing her taking control and harnessing her dragon energy right out of the gate. Good for her. I was wondering if Sir Criston was an entirely willing participant, since at first he seemed very hesitant. Was he just going along with it out of duty to the princess and fulfilling what she wanted? I do wish the writers would have let the chemistry and tension between the two of them build up a bit longer before their coupling, but I know they have to move along in the timeline. It was still, as you said, a very steamy scene and one of my favorite parts of the episode. Keep up the great commentary, guys. Much enjoyed.
Criston Cole was probably hesitant because, like, he definitely wants to do this.
It goes against everything he's promised.
Yeah, and it's dangerous for him. If it comes out that he's boning the king's daughter
He'll
and
die.
The presumed heir, he will be executed, because that's what happens to the king's guard when they take, you know, they forsake their celibacy vows. Like, there was that one, it's an ancestor of the Strongs. I forget his name, but he had he secretly had three wives and like 16 kids. And when the king found out, I think it was Jaehaerys, King Jaehaerys found out. And so he cut his dick off and sent him to the wall.
He did indeed. Not the dick. The rest of him went to the wall.
Oh, I thought it was just the dick.
Yeah, he sent his dick to the wall. I could just like to picture one of the brothers of the Night's Watch there standing and then just a severed wiener.
You are the god. You are the shield that guards the realms of man. And it's just a dick.
We suck. But very astute. Yeah, I did think they set it up pretty well, because they gave him that long extended scene in episode 3 out in the woods and such. But I could see your point as well.
Yeah, it would be nice to have a little bit more.
Especially if you didn't have the books to like fill in a lot of the stuff. But that's a good thing about the show. A lot of the stuff we didn't have in the books either. Like, this was all kind of rumored to be true. So great thoughts. Great thoughts. Steve, take it away. The next email comes from Emmy.
Emmy writes in, "Hey guys, hope you're well. Enjoying the show as always. Had a couple of points on this episode I wanted to share." This is referring to episode 4. Number one, I already tweeted this at you, so ignore this if you already saw that. Well, we're not going to ignore this. The showrunners...
It's the same thing everyone else is yelling at us for.
The showrunners in the after the episode had a different take on why Daemon left the brothel. The too long didn't read is that as soon as he felt he wasn't in control anymore because Rhaenyra was into it, slash not being handheld so much through their first sexual experience, he wasn't, quote, into it anymore. Number two, when considering whether this was a planned thing to get an accepted proposal, I'm still undecided. But it made
it made me
think of the season 1 of Bridgerton. If you're not familiar, Daphne and Simon get frisky and are forced to marry because otherwise her reputation would be ruined. I thought of this, and because I wonder if Daemon was planning to just do enough, just be seen to have enough evidence to force an engagement in order to not ruin Rhaenyra's reputation. Loving the coverage. Also really appreciate all the disclaimers about being a cis male white podcast. LOL. You guys are so respectful and it doesn't go unnoticed. Normally, I think I'd probably feel really out of place listening to some quote unquote bros, but you guys truly make this gal feel welcome and included. So thank you. Plus, if you ever seriously want a femme perspective on the pod, I would gladly volunteer as a female nerdy film loving tribute.
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 Hunger Games reference.
She volunteers as tribute.
Okay, bye for now, Emmy. I really appreciate that. And I'm a huge fan of Bridgerton season one. Steve, did you watch?
That's the Duke, right?
Yes.
I did not watch it.
That is a steamy, lovely show.
It's what I hear.
Big fan.
A lot of people love that show.
Big fan.
But what do you think? Are you still undecided about if Daemon was...
I am. Again, I stan Daemon as much as I don't want to. And I don't want to think that he's manipulating my queen. At all. I like to think that even though it's gross, he has like actual feelings and all that, you know, everything else is just because I think he's a dog chasing cars. And though he does want the throne, I think some of these political machinations would be beneath him because he thinks mm-hmm. it's already his. You know what I mean? So from an arrogant way, I don't think he's going to be scheming too hard. Now, he's very well aware that if he marries as the previous heir to the throne, if he marries the current heir to the throne, he's got it pretty much in the bag.
Right.
But he also, I think he's like, sidebar, she's also super hot and we would be a great power couple. So it's not mm-hmm. just machinations, right?
Right. He's such a complicated character. I think that's why so many people like him. Cause even though he does have these machinations for the throne, he also like deeply cares about his brother too.
He does. When Corlys tried to talk shit, he was like,
Yeah. He has this very incredibly dense relationship relationship to all his family members. It's quite fascinating to watch. He's a fun character to watch.
He is. He's very watchable.
And Rhaenyra as well. Like, I'm really happy that Rhaenyra is starting to kind of step up and kind of claim more and more of the limelight as the season goes on.
Well, they'll have already watched the episode by the time they hear this. So that makes it sad. But this will be the last episode with Millie Alcock and Emily Carey. So I'm very sad about that. I know that Olivia Cooke and Emma Darcy will crush it as well, but I'm very sad to see those actors go. They've done such a great job. Mm-hmm. But this next email comes from Kaylin. Hello, I found y'all's podcast during season 4 of Stranger Things, as most people did. And I've got to say, I absolutely love your content. Been catching up on some of your old episodes and following along with your House of the Dragon coverage now too. Thank you. My question is this. Won't Daemon now get grayscale from being covered in the crab feeder's blood after ripping him apart? I mean, the battle was extremely satisfying, but I can't help but wonder how he would escape contracting the disease amidst all the gore, given how alarmed Jorah was when he and Tyrion came across men with grayscale in Game of Thrones, and he warned Tyrion not to let them touch him. Surely Daemon isn't taken down by something as miserable and lame as grayscale, lol. Just a thought, keep up the good work. I have two thoughts about that. I don't think that the showrunners of Hot D thought as much as they maybe should have with the, what's the word for when something's extremely contagious? Now we'll just say the extreme contagiousness of grayscale, but also Targaryens are mythically rumored to be immune to most diseases. Mm-hmm. And so that could be, we could chalk it up to that as well. That just, cause we've never seen a Targaryen come across grayscale.
There's also very rare instances where people are not cured of their grayscale, but they can make it stop spreading. Kind of like Shireen Baratheon from Game of Thrones. She had grayscale, but they had stopped it at some point.
And Jorah himself.
And Jorah as well. Like, they still have the scars from it, but they
can't. You wonder how I got these scars?
that would have been Daemon if he got grayscale. But yeah, they have the scar, but it's no longer contagious to other people, but that is incredibly rare. So maybe that's why the crab feeder, you know, obviously he looks really, really bad. That's probably why he wears a mask, but maybe that's why he's been able to have this siege for so long in the Sex Zones, because his contagion had progressed to a certain point. They stopped it and now it's no longer going to kill him, but he's still disfigured from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe.
That's, I don't know. It's definitely something that you can raise your eyebrow on and be like, is that really the lore reason? Or did you guys just forget how this worked?
Yeah. I mean, I get a little bit of vibe that they were just like, hey, let's throw in some grayscale stuff. But I think there's some good lore reasons why they wouldn't have had any trouble with that. I don't think it's inconsistent. But our next email comes in from Adam. You want to take that away, Steve?
Adam writes, Hey, my fucking guys.
Yeah, this email's good luck to Steve, because there's a lot of vernacular, but
this one's coming in hot. I like it. I have just finished the fan-made Game of Thrones season 8 podcast, and it's incredible. I love you three. I don't want to walk through an episode with any other less sexy mothers. Oh, mothers. We're sexy mothers, man. Does that make us MILFs?
It does.
Love the YouTube, so I get all your fucking faces. Look, if you legends get time to visit the fan-made beauty, you won't be disappointed. Streaming Things is a pod I tell everyone about. So fucking funny. I'll never go changing. So, so dope. Keep up the characters. You give me something to look forward to and geek out when some people just don't get it. Adam. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then he puts a link to the podcast. The pod that he speaks of is GOT. Is that the name of it? It's Game of Thrones.
Yeah, GOTS8R.com. It's Game of Thrones Season 8 Redux. Redo.
Have you listened to any of this, Chris?
I have not. I am familiar with it. There's a friend of mine on TikTok named, I think she goes by Lady Lannister or Casterly Talk. She's actually not a friend of mine. She has no idea I exist because I don't know why. I mean, I'm pretty cool on there. I do follow her stuff. She talks a lot about Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon and mostly deep book lore stuff. And so she's talked about the pod on TikTok a lot. So I know that it exists, but I haven't listened to it yet. But it is like one of the, I told you about it last week, Steve.
Remember? I listened to it.
Oh, you listened to it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do you think of it?
Well, I've only listened to the first two episodes. It's really, really well done. If it wasn't clear, listeners, what it is these people have gotten together. They have essentially rewritten all of season 8 of Game of Thrones. They have hired professional voice actors to, there's like a narrator that narrates the scripts, and then they have people playing the different characters from the show. And it's basically kind of like trying to fix what a lot of people don't appreciate about season 8 of Game of Thrones. I've only listened to the first episode and some of the second episode, and at this point there isn't much deviation between the two yet, so it was kind of like, oh yeah, I remember that happening in the show exactly. Word for word, right. But I think the production value is incredibly well done. It's very impressive that they were able to write it, one, and B, get all these actors to come in and do a pretty stand-up job.
Yeah.
Some of them like sound downright just like the actual actors. Like there's the guy who plays Theon Greyjoy, I think sounds just like Alfie Allen, and it's pretty rad. And then the guy who plays Jon Snow is doing a pretty good job. Like he's doing that like very specific Kit Harington style of talking, and it's pretty amusing. But
I won't bend the knee.
I won't bend the knee. My queen.
I love her. I need a cigarette.
I don't know.
I'm a Targaryen now.
Yes. Yeah, they start smoking when they do that.
But no, yeah, check that out. Game of Thrones Season 8 Redux. It's pretty cool. So thank you for getting me hip to that, Adam.
Yeah, my fucking guy.
My fucking guy.
This next email comes from Brooke, a friend of mine on Twitter now.
Ooh, Brooke.
We're friends. Hi there, Chris, Andy, and Steve. I found you guys, and this is just, she's just being kind to us. I just wanted to read it. I found you guys after my partner and I binged all 4 seasons of Stranger Things, first time watchers, after the season 4 release, and I was ravenous for more Stranger Things content. I'll be honest, I tried a few other Stranger Things podcasts, I won't name names, before finding yours, and none of them hit the mark for me until I found Streaming Things. The moment you called out Hellfire Club as an X-Men reference, I knew I was home free.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell how great of friends you are, and your humor is top notch.
Yeah,
the hot D abbreviation for House of the Dragon made me literally laugh out loud the first time I heard it, and Marty B and Argyle making guest appearances kills me every time. I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan, if you can't tell by my email. Danny, it's a Game of Thrones reference. Danny is my favorite character, so when I saw you guys were going to cover Hot D, I was amped. The character of Daenerys is actually what pushed me to start cosplaying and making my own costumes under the name Tatted Khaleesi. I just wanted to plug that as well, because she does some great cosplay work on Twitter, which then spiraled into being a major part of my life, renewing my love for comics and many other nerd life things that I won't go into detail on here because, frankly, we'd be here for hours. But to have a place in this podcast to get to listen to discussion, in-depth lore, theories, and predictions is really something I was missing until I found streaming things. To wrap up, and already linked the email, I am stoked we have more Targaryens and more dragons with Hot D, and so glad you guys are covering it. Listening to your podcast feels like hanging out with friends and is such a great addition to my day, whether it's on my hour-long commute to work or cleaning or listening while I work on my creative projects. Thanks for all that you do. I remember seeing the first episode of Hot D pop up on the pod and thought, you guys must never actually sleep. Steve doesn't.
What?
Can't wait for more streaming things.
Please?
Love, F you, Mike, tatted Khaleesi / Brooke. You can share my name if you so wish. Oh, thank God, because I totally did. I just wanted to read that because, again, it will never cease to catch me in the feels when I picture people that are like me out in the world, all over the world, trying desperately to escape the hell that can often be life and just obsessing over these nerd things, but feeling kind of alone in that obsession. Mm-hmm. And then finding a community and in something that I helped create, right? Like mm-hmm. some kind of togetherness that I'm helping to foster through my own self same loneliness, right? So I just thought that was really neat. Thank you so much for taking the time to reach out and let us know that.
What's sleep?
What is sleep?
Yeah, she mentioned that.
I've heard of this thing. I don't think we'd like it, to be honest.
Oh, we don't. Oh, okay. I'll still clear from it.
Yeah, for sure. And we have one last hot D mailbag. This one comes in from Jennifer. Steve.
Jennifer writes in, "Hi guys, I am loving the Hot D pod just as much as the Stranger Things pod.
Wow,
the awesome content. That is high praise. I have some questions maybe you can answer about dragon eggs. How long do they take to hatch and how do you hatch them? I know what Daenerys did in the original show, but wondering how they did it during the Hot D times. Also, does the dragon egg in the cradle bond with a baby and become the dragon they will ride? On a different subject, I was wondering why Daemon never tried to marry Rhaenyra. I know it's creepy, but that is what their house did. We should note
this email came in 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yes. Yeah. This is, yeah. So he has tried since. They seem to actually like and respect each other and have a little chemistry. Any insight on that? Maybe the age difference is too much, but again, that's what they did. One last thought. I believe the show was contrasting how Rhaenyra killed the boar and how badass it was with how lame the king was when he killed the stag to show how much more suited she is to leadership than he is. Sorry if I spelled the names wrong. Thanks again for all you do. I say the names wrong all the time, Jen, so don't even worry about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Chris, you want to take the dragon eggs question?
I'll do my best. There's some differentiation as far as the lore is concerned. It's definitely not how Daenerys has to do it. There's no association with heat necessarily to hatch them. As far as how long it takes, I'm honestly not sure. Other than that, I think it happens pretty much randomly. Like, they seem to be kind of like, oh, like at the time of House of the Dragon, there are
14, I think.
I want to say 17.
It's in the teens. Yeah.
Dragons in existence. There's going to be 9 shown in the first season of the show, but there's about 17 in existence and a plethora of eggs. And they are in the tradition of putting an egg in the cradle just because they believe dragons and Targaryens to be spiritually linked. It doesn't necessitate that that's the dragon that they'll have, though. When they come of age to be a rider, they can choose whatever dragon they want. And there typically is some kind of random bond that happens that makes it okay.
It's sort of like if you go to choose your own pet, and then you know how sometimes if you go and look, you're looking for a dog, for instance, and the dog chooses you more than you choose the dog. It's kind of like that.
Indeed. Indeed. So I hope that answers your question. It's kind of all over the place as far as what I've read.
Because Caraxes isn't Daemon's original, like Daemon is not the original dragon rider for Caraxes.
He is not. And Vhagar has been ridden by 3 or 4 people. Started with Visenya.
Yeah. And is CC Smoke isn't originally Laenor's dragon, right?
No.
The only one I think that is like the original rider with their dragon is Syrax. Is that right?
I think Rhaenyra is Syrax's first rider. And then Dreamfire, who is the egg that was stolen, I think. That was originally Queen Rhaena's dragon. And I think that was her cradle dragon. But it doesn't always happen that way is what we're getting at. So not necessarily. So it's kind of all over the place.
And then I think tonight, actually, when we watch Hot D, they're going to introduce Maelys, which is
Rhaenys's
dragon. Yes. And I know she's not Maelys. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. Maelys. That's not her first.
That's
rider.
Not her first rider either. So
we're going to see Vhagar.
I hope we see Vhagar. That's going to be so cool. It's
such a big fucking dragon.
Oh, I hope so.
And hopefully Noodle Boy, always.
Always Noodle Boy. Give me that big red noodly boy. I love him.
We've only got a few minutes until the episode 5 of House of the Dragon drops. So we're super excited for that. But we got a couple of Rings of Power emails, if you guys want to stick around for those. Ooh. This one comes in from Lee. Remember the painting of Elrond and his brother when Galadriel was at the Scroll Library with Elendil? He looks like Adar. Could be wrong, but it's quite a coincidence. So they're saying that there was the painting when Galadriel was in the library and that maybe Adar is Elrond's brother?
Could be. I mean, Adar is a made for the show character, like, right?
All of it is basically. Yeah. I think you'll enjoy Rings of Power much more if you see it as kind of like a fan fiction, because they don't have the rights to anything that it's actually talking about.
Right.
So if you're a huge lore buff, just get over that. I think it's very possible because, you know, Andy, I was listening to our coverage of episode 4. And what was it? The Great Wave. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
And he was talking about, he thinks Adar is some kind of vestige of the original elf war against, Morgoth, which is probably obvious to most people, but it wasn't to me. And so I think that's very possible that they would do something like tie it in specifically with Elrond's family.
Yeah. And that also brings an added element of drama between the characters. Like, oh, this is a character we know and is related to Elrond and how tragic it is that we have to fight him.
No, it's going to be sad.
Oh, no, my brother. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Celebrimbor here.
Steve, do you want to read the next email from Caleb?
From Caleb.
And this is the first email, not the response to my response.
Caleb? I don't see it.
You got to go to, oh, you got to go to Rings, baby. It's another folder.
Did you make another folder? Yeah. Oh, Rings, baby.
Yeah, you told me to.
The name of the actual folder is Rings, baby.
Yeah.
I didn't know you did that. That's funny. Okay. So we're reading Caleb's letter. Caleb writes in with, hey, Steve, Chris, and Andy.
Hello.
First off, I want to say that I'm so glad to have become a patron of y'all's show. Y'all are amazing. I listen to you practically every day. I'm also so stoked that y'all made a Discord. I've been wanting that for the show badly for so long.
Yay.
So happy to be part of the Streaming Things family. Thank you for working so hard and giving us the best and sexiest content.
Oh,
Caleb is getting hunting here. He continues, secondly, I have a genuine question because I know y'all read the Lord of the Rings books while Chris does. I was thinking while watching Rings of Power, how some people get so outraged, offended, or appalled that there are people of color playing roles in the new show or other popular shows, which is absolutely ridiculous. These people need help. Truly, truly need help. Does Tolkien ever even specify or directly tell you what the character's race is? Do most books that are adapted into shows ever usually specify that unless, I'm sorry, I can't read. Do most books that are adapted into shows ever usually specify that unless they want you to know what the character looks like? I just want to know because some people get so caught up into it if the castings are staying true to the quote unquote race of the characters in the book. Personally, I think that it's insane that people think that way. They are fictional characters. It shouldn't matter who gets casted for them. As long as they are good actors or actresses and they can pay homage to the in a respectful way for that character. And I think the characters in the show are 100% going to do that. I know I'm saying a lot right now, but I thought y'all would have good answers and thoughts on that because I know y'all are great guys and y'all feel the same way about that. Y'all absolutely think that there should be more opportunities for people of color on TV and movies. I do too. Hope y'all see this and would love to hear y'all's thoughts. Love you guys. Also, Andy, you're not alone. Heath Bars.
You don't have to read that.
Are really damn good. Don't let Chris and Steve give you too much of a hard time.
As far as the lore,
I had me Caleb until that last.
Oh boy. I really think it's important to say I'm not at all the lore expert that somebody like Don Marshall or New Better Do Better is on TikTok as far as Lord of the Rings is concerned. But Tolkien does specify, at least with elves, as far as I recall, fair of hair and skin, blah, 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 things like that. Right. I think there are some lore instances where that is not the case, that they would be, you'd be better to ask one of the other people I just mentioned. However, my main thoughts on this are that it doesn't even remotely fucking matter. Right. Like you're talking about, first off, the guy wrote the books in the 50s and 60s, early 60s with the letters and stuff like that. Like, this is not a time period for inclusivity that we want to reference and stay true to at all.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, none of it's real. They're all, no. None of it's real. They're elves.
It could be literally whatever you want.
Elves don't exist. It could be Steve's dog Pippin could play an elf and really nobody could say shit.
No one would dare say shit because Pippin would be an amazing elf.
Trey's adorbs elf.
Let me use my elf eyes and I will see.
And again, I'm a white dude, so I'm not going to speak too much on it in the sense of like, yes, I have opinions, but who the fuck cares about my opinions in this regard? Other than it is obvious to me that the people that are very upset about the casting of the people of color and Elvish roles in this, and even in roles in Hot D as the Velaryons. And now it's a huge thing as we're recording this that, you know, Ariel from Little Mermaid is a person of color, and mermaids are not real either. So all the scientific nonsense that they're bringing up in defense of their prejudice is ridiculous. But it's obvious to me that they are going to be upset anytime that happens because they are racist, and that bothers them to see people of color on. I can't even wrap my head around it, because here's the thing that's so fucked up to me. It's not like the original Little Mermaid will not still exist.
Right.
So it does not matter. And you know what I mean? Like the Lord of the Rings movies still exist. The books still exist. So even if you're race swapping for effect, that's fine. It just gives that someone else an opportunity to see themselves. Like, I am a white dude, so I have been able to watch action movies and fantasy movies and, you know, content of all types and be able to see myself on screen doing cool shit my entire life. So I can't imagine what it's like to not be able to find that no matter how hard I look. Right. But I can kind of imagine how cool that would be to finally have that. And so those are my thoughts. I hope that was clear. I don't know if I just went on a ramble there. I think Steve and Andy have made it clear where we stand on stuff like this. We don't talk about it a ton. We did get an iTunes review that we are way too woke to get more than 2 stars.
Are you one of them wokes?
Which I was like, what?
That email or that review in particular, I was scratching my head like, what is it? What? Oh, I'm sorry, because we were like, hey, we're white dude. We're cis white men. So like, maybe seek someone else's opinion on this very specific thing. And he's like, ah, too woke.
Oh, was that the episode 4 comments?
I think, cause that was right around
the time. I'm telling you, everybody got really fucking pissed that I was like trying to be careful about talking about very specifically female issues. And I find that bizarre. Like, what is so weird about going into a space where you have no knowledge or experience and being like, I don't know, maybe it's best you ask someone else. What is so weird about that? Like if I walked into a fucking construction building and just wandered in by accident and somebody was like, hey, buddy, how's the miter cut angle on this carpentry work going here? Do you think this will hold the load bearing wall? I would be like, I don't know, man. You should probably ask somebody else. That's fucking obvious.
Right. Exactly.
And then, oh, that's awful woke of you not to offer an opinion on the carpentry angle there, buddy. What? Just come up with something, idiot.
That word has no meaning in today's society anymore.
Sorry.
Have overused it. So I want to bring on this topic. There is a Twitter user. Her name is Laura Shortridge Scott. She did a whole Twitter thread on this very thing. And I think it's worth kind of picking out some of the things she pulled out. So she starts off by making different tweets and showing photos of famous film characters that come from books, but she's showing the film version of the character. I'm going to read a couple of these. In the Hunger Games books, Haymitch is described as a, quote, paunchy with curly dark hair. Movie Haymitch, blonde and slim. No one minded. In The Princess Bride, Vizini is described as having a near angelic face. The movie, this fucking guy. And it's the guy who plays him in Prince. I can't remember that actor's face, but he does not have a near angelic face.
He was just in Clueless.
He was just in Clueless. She continues, in the books, Tolkien described the Hardfoot as being, quote, browner of skin than hobbits. Here are 2 screenshots of Hardfoots in the Rings of Power show. Guess which one people are mad about. And she shows Sardauk and Nori. She continues, in the Hunger Games books, Rue is described as having, quote, dark brown skin and eyes. When a black actress was cast to play a canonically black character, there was enough of an outcry to make several news headlines. It's just, and she continues with like a ton of these examples of
every single time it happens, people will be mad because they're racist.
And literally, it's always when it's a different race at it, when it's like a, well, not even different. If it's just like a minority character playing a popular character in a movie, it's always like, oh, hey, this is wrong. Yeah, and literally, like, so it never happens if it's like, you know, it's just if you cast a minority into a thing, people who are racist are looking for excuses to be angry and mean about it.
So I hope that, you know, that explains our thoughts on that, Caleb. And thank you for writing in. Our next email comes very quickly from Corey talking about Bear McCreary's music in Rings of Power was so much better on Black Sails.
Oh, shit.
Disappointed he wasted all his pirate powers there and had nothing left for the ship arrival scene at Braavos. Sorry, I mean Numenor. So I think he's taking some pot shots at Rings of Power there. But
the Numa Numa song?
I think this I think that the score is pretty good, but I never watched Black Sails. I think that was like a Cinemax show or Showtime. Maybe. Did you watch that, Steve?
I couldn't. Yeah. Cause it was on one of those shows that
I want to check it out. I love pirates.
It looks good. Yeah.
I've been watching lots of Banshee. I've been watching all kinds of random old shows. So I'll probably get to Black Sails very soon.
My dude.
The next email comes from longtime listener and friend of the show, Shay. You want to take that over, Steve?
Shay writes, "Hey guys, I'm currently listening to the pod covering the third episode of Rings of Power, and I think I do understand why you were frustrated with the episode. It's hard for me to completely empathize because I am one of those people who listen to lots of podcasts about things I'm watching, so a lot of this episode's content was stuff being theorized and discussed before it aired. So I actually did know it was Numenor, like I'm sure really hardcore Tolkien readers probably deduced. I read the books, but it was a while ago and it took me an entire year to finish all three, LOL." That's quicker than me. "But on the topic of Isildur and him being a character that we have this negative perception of him from the original movies, one thing I heard from some discussion after the episode aired was that everything we heard about Isildur was a direct recounting from Elrond. We know that at that point..."
Elvish propaganda.
Yeah, it was. "We know at that point in his life, he definitely does not look favorably upon men and would have had a lot of animosity towards Isildur's favor. But apparently in the books, Isildur's failure to get rid of the ring was less of a quote, 'No, I'm keeping it because I want all that power,' and more of a moral failing of a man who was hurting and trying to heal from war. I think it's implied it was something he kept as sentiment and reminder of his father and grandfather that were killed. You should listen to the Ringer Versus podcast about it."
No.
No. Nay, what podcast? I bleeped it out. "They talk about this in far better detail than I can remember. They think the show will show us a more complex portrayal of Isildur as a character. Oh, about the elves and why we should care about the two elves who die. I don't know that we are supposed to be devastated by the deaths themselves, but the deaths are supposed to signify the hopelessness of the situation Arondir is in and the ultimate threat of the orcs and the evil that is growing."
Side note, she wrote Orca, and I pictured Free Willy. Go on,
this
sorry.
Is Blackfish. "Last thing, I promise, Halbrand, I think, following the Sauron theory, was not lying when he talked to Galadriel. He says he took the necklace off a dead man. I think maybe he actually did as a means of disguise. He also says, 'My family lost the war.' Maybe he is actually talking about Morgoth's forces losing. Just wanted to point that out." Uh-huh. Now we're getting into some Sauron propaganda. Mm-hmm. Am I right? Shay, is this, or are you really Sauron?
Yeah.
Is this Halbrand writing
Real
in?
Real clever of you to be a patron, Sauron.
I'm not falling for it, Sauron. I see your eye upon us. She finishes up with, "Anyway, sorry to hear y'all didn't enjoy the episode very much. Hopefully you love next week's episode. Spoiler, we did. So she said, thanks. So thank you so much for writing in, Shay, and always being a supporter of the show, even if we hate certain episodes of things.
Very much, much love to you, Shay. And I do want to say that was a joke. I don't listen to Ringerverse. I haven't gotten into it yet, but Joanna Robinson is a host of that show. One of the many, because there's a lot of them. They do like daily episodes. Love, love, love Joanna Robinson. She has helped. She's like my podcast mommy. She has shaped everything I do with this microphone. I think she's a brilliant mind. Like, she predicted season one of Westworld on like episode 2. That there was like, I think there's different, we're in different time periods depending on which scene we're in. And like, you know what I mean? Like, that's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Spot on detective work.
Yeah.
I've been just in love with her brain ever since. I think she's one of the best podcasters to ever do it. So very much joking, but also just listen to Streaming Things. Do you know what I'm saying? I think that's pretty cut and dry.
Just us.
Our last email comes in from Tabitha, and she writes, "Hi, Steve, Chris, and Andy."
Hi.
Steve's name first again. It's whatever. "Since I heard you guys started a correction segment into the pod, I had two things." Oh, I'm not going to read this then. Two things I noted I thought you might find interesting. Number one, apparently rattle your dags is an actual saying from New Zealand and Australia, and a bit different / grosser than what we thought. Dags is the, we talked about this before, but this was the email I referenced. Dags is the word to refer to the mangy, crusty clumps of hair hanging around a sheep's bum. LOL. When a sheep is made to hurry, their dags rattle. Number two, and I think there's some doo-doo in there as well. It gets even grosser. Number number two. The second thing is that I had a totally different take on what the role of the elvish healer or artificer does. It seemed to me from watching and how it was phrased that the healers weren't plastic surgeons of sorts. But when Arendir spoke, saying they created things of beauty and looking upon beauty heals the soul, it seemed to me that this was saying that they were more of artists and artisans, that they weren't healing actual wounds per se, but emotional and spiritual ones. Fixes for the elvish ennui, if you would. This makes Bronwyn's line right after Arendir tells her about the artifers, "Well, I hope you find Alfrin flowers beautiful," makes sense. It is something he can look upon and feel better from. When I dug deeper, there doesn't seem a whole bunch with the word artificer in the Tolkien lore, but what there is related to smith or referencing world builders. This makes me think that I am correct in assuming that it is referencing artisans in the elven world to be their healers. In this case, Celebrimbor is likely considered one.
Hello.
Elrond is known to be a healer, and he clearly studies with Celebrimbor, so this lines up well. Hope these may have been some interesting factoids or takes for y'all. Thank you for your work in keeping us small folk entertained. Best, Tabitha. Thank you so much. You're 100% adding some things there. I think you got some great points about the artificers. And I'm so glad you guys are enjoying Rings of Power. We have to prepare. We have 7 minutes until we delve into episode 5 of House of the Dragon. Again, as you listen to this, it'll be a couple of days after we watched it. You've already heard our whole take on it.
Yeah, so some of these takes based off these emails might be wrong because they updated a whole bunch of shit in episode 5.
Timey-wimey things.
It is a flat circle.
But no matter what,
a cruel mistress,
we are so grateful that you guys all wrote in and get to engage on this stuff that we love so much with us. We love you so much. Continue to do that. Write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com at any time and as often as you want. And if you want to join into future like bonus episodes or watch parties or, you know, in the all day, every day chat with our giant community on the Discord, go to patreon.com/streamingthings and consider signing up at a variety of tiers for some extra bonus points and whatnots. And also follow us on Twitter @streamthingpod. And that is all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. The new patron shout out. Thank you for your patronage.
You have a beautiful voice.
I don't think I do.
Aww. It's pretty good.
Don't be so hard on yourself, buddy.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Would smash. Well, we're doing patron shout outs differently this time, guys. We're going to do them once a month, and this recording will last the entire month. But in this month, we will go over the new patrons that sign up for the month and also the patrons who upgraded their tiers that month as well. Mm. Are you excited to find out the cool people that did such a thing?
I'm very excited.
All right. So let me introduce to you our brand new patrons for the Try Before You Deny tier. It's Aaron Layton and Crystal Trujillo.
Woo! Hi, friends.
In the Marty P VIP tier, it's Josh and Anna.
Marty B.
What did I say?
Marty P.
Oh, Marty B. Excuse me. How fucking dare you? I've been here for how long and you don't know my name.
The entire time, sir.
You've given me a terrible wound.
What if Marty B's like a Marty P, man?
Well, our new chocolate pudding producers, we have Alex Fisher, Brittany Deck, Enver Psycho. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm surely not.
Probably not, man.
Jen L, Jess R, Mandy Spears, Shannon Myers, and Zach Suthers. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, friend.
Thanks, Puchachos.
And our final new patron in the Friends Don't Lie tier, we have Colin P. Frost. Thank you, Colleen.
Another P, man.
Thank you so much. Now we go into the upgrades.
That's the road less traveled, man.
These are the people that gave us money before, and we thought, hey, what about more money for these guys? Because they're just so giving and full of mirth.
Mirth,
all of it. These people upgraded to the Try Before You Deny tier.
Try Before You Deny, man.
Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Casey McCain, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate Kiki, and Will Nash. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
And then these people upgraded to the Marty B VIP section. Thank you, A. Wells, Adam Horn, Adam Raymond, Arcade Shenanigans, Barb, Caleb Jeter, Carmelita Valdez McCoy. I love saying your name fully, Carmelita, because it's so cool. Chloe Richardson, Cindy Miller Ray, Elizabeth Hubbard, Enza, Jimmy Gadd, John Madden, like the John Madden. Isn't he dead?
Yes.
Well, they
thought,
dead. But he's on the cover of Madden 23. And now he's here to write X's and circles over footage of football players. Thank you, Jadinglage. Thank you,
Jadinglage.
Morgus. Thank you, Katie Blair. Kayla, Kayla Hickens.
It's me. It's me. The French Oak.
Thank you, Lisa L. Marcus Mills. Michelle Moore. Nick Nolte. Nicole Cassis. Paola Garcia. Sean Callahan. Stephanie Pagalis. Suzanne Rode and Sydney Day. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
And good night.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.